Back here on the Sports Revolution, our playoff coverage continues, brought to you by Dex Imaging and Mailing. I'm here with Brian Eggblom from NBC Sports. He's doing the coverage for CNBC, MSNBC, the family of networks carrying these NHL playoffs. And Brian, first off, your positioning here at Joe Louis Arena, a lot of people were commenting on how the tight space there between those benches, but not a whole lot of wiggle room there to watch the game.
No, there isn't. That is definitely, it couldn't be any smaller, put it that way. My shoulders are touching the glass on either side, but I'm still thankful that I'm able to be down at ice level, because that's the place to watch the game from.
Well, it's interesting, you know, especially during these playoffs, seeing the guys down there with the coverage that the different networks do. When you first did it, how do you get the hang of it? What's the best way to do it, communicating with your people upstairs and things like that?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's great. What I said a moment ago, I love being down there. I was always jealous of the basketball announcers. Like, they're right there. They're right there on the floor. They get to do that. And some buildings were about 50 feet from the sun. You know, it used to drive me nuts. You can't see any. There's no feel for the game. It's just like watching little ants, you know, from up in the press box or someplace. It drove me crazy. I still don't like that. But it is what it is. The buildings are constructed the way they are. So being able to be down at ice level gives you a terrific perspective. Now, there's always a trade-off for everything. There's some things I can't see down there because I get blocked out. There's too many bodies at the net, for instance. I can't see how a play finishes just because of that. When you're up top, you can look down on it and you can see certain things. So, again, trade-off for everything. But it's about the energy. It's about the feel of and seeing the players' eyes and seeing their reactions and seeing what they see. You can't tell that from upstairs.
Really?
On television, you can sometimes when the camera is in the right place, but you can see what the players are seeing and try to process what they're seeing and why they made that play. It may look dumb at the time, but it may be smarter than you think, because you know you see and feel what was going on there. Plus the speed of the game. I can tell you, people say, well, that was kind of a boring game. Even from the press box, I'll see, you know, a writer or something after the game and say, well, that was kind of a boring game. I said, well, you should have been down there. What if, wasn't like that. There are no slow games in the NHL these days. Believe me, these guys are fast, they're big, and they're strong. So it takes a little bit. It's a little more difficult actually doing the game down there because it is so fast. You're in it. You feel like you're in it. Whereas upstairs, you're looking down on it and observing it. So it's a little bit more intense and a little bit more difficult. Like anything else, you have to get used to it as you go along.
Brian, we expected this series between the Red Wings and the Predators to be pretty close, and that's exactly how it's been. Anything surprise you so far from what you've seen?
Not really. What I see is the advancement of Nashville as a team. Certainly from the last times that they played Detroit in the playoffs, they are a better team. They are deeper. They do have more offense. The changes they started to make last year, starting probably with Fisher first and foremost, the trades that David Poile made this year, and the additions have made a difference. They play with a lot of confidence. They know that they can beat Detroit. I think there was always that apprehension before in the past, and was understandable. Detroit had some pretty enormous teams, and not that there are any slouches this year, but I think that Nashville knows that they earned the home ice advantage, even by there was the slightest of margins. So I think the series is going pretty much the way I expected, to be honest with you.
I heard Mike Babcock just minutes ago, you were in there as well, talking about Nick Lidstrom being at almost 42 years old, but still being just a tremendous heady player, a very effective player. But he talked about recovery not being quite the same as maybe it was 4 years ago, 8 years ago, et cetera. Do you think that could have an impact on this series as it goes forward?
Well, sure. He's going to be 42. Lidstrom's going to be 42 years old. Yeah, you don't bounce quite as well as you did when you were 25 or even 35. As
I know I don't.
Said. Yeah, oh, I don't. That's for sure. Having said that, one of the biggest part of Nick's game has been his brain. He is brilliant at the game. Absolutely brilliant. There's nobody smarter I think I've ever seen play the game. So he's ahead of the curve all the time. So he knows himself well. He knows what he can accomplish and what he maybe can't even, more than we do, and he's not going to tell us. But his brain puts him one step ahead. So if he feels like he's lost a step on any given night, then he'll give himself that step because he's figured out the play coming at him. He knows what to do always, and then he just executes. always seems to make the right play. I mean, one of the things that's made Nick able to play this long too is they've always said in the playoffs, oh, you got to get in there, you got to hit Lidstrom, you got to wear him out, you got to hit him. Good luck with that. I mean, all these years later, they're still trying to do that. You might tag him once or twice in a series, if you're lucky, because when you go to hit him, puck's already gone. And so, yeah, you can take a late hit on him. He knows how to protect himself. And he also knows that you take any liberties with him, the other guys are going to come in. So, and there's a respect factor that Nick gets because of that, too. So you play him hard, you play him straight up, but at the same time, it is tough to wear Nick Lidstrom out.
One thing that I've been watching a lot, especially with the Predators not having Hal Gill at their disposal yet, just the chess match with Suter and Weber out there that when Barry Trotz puts him out, and how Mike Babcock is trying to get the right matchups with his weapons, with Datsyuk and Zetterberg split up on the different lines. It's pretty interesting how that's transpired so far.
There's no doubt. Hal Gill, one of the things that was great about it is that he was so good at penalty killing, and that takes an enormous amount of pressure. The hardest minutes you play in any game are penalty killing minutes. They're intense. You're fighting almost all the time, and that takes a tremendous amount out of you. You're in the corners a lot. You're battling in front of the net. All these different things are going on. So that's why those minutes are so hard. So you have to play Weber and Suter that much more in those situations. It makes it more difficult. They're in great condition. They're young. So they'll worry about that as they go along. I mean, it's about winning every night. You can't say, well, you know, I can only play, you know, Weber 25 minutes or 26 minutes. I got to keep him for the next game. I don't think Barry Trotz is ever thinking about that. You got to win, and you're going to win with Suter and Weber out on the ice. You saw that last game. They were out there. I mean, did they ever get off the ice in the last three or four minutes? I don't know. They were out there all the time, and well, it should be. I've seen that in the past. You know, I remember when Larry Robinson won the Conn Smythe Trophy. It was the same thing. Larry was out there all the time. Larry, can you go? Can you go? Get back out there. And I went to the Barbados with him afterwards, you know, after we'd won the cup about a week and a half later, and he was just green. I mean, his skin looked so pale. It was awful. He looked sick. He was inside out, absolutely inside out, emotionally, physically, whatever. And it was the greatest feeling he'd ever had. And so if you're a Nashville Predators fan, you hope that for Suter and Weber.
Well, Brian, before we let you go, you mentioned David Poile earlier. You go way back with him. You played for him in your days in Washington. How have you just seen this whole thing evolve? It looks like consistency is the thing that jumped out with him over all these years. But you've known him for a long time. What are your thoughts as they go forward? He still yearns for that first championship.
Yeah, it's a great thing. We've been talking about the Nashville Predators ever since they came into the league, and over so many years now with both David and Barry Trotz still being there since the beginning. That's a great thing, and a lot of organizations around the league should take a lesson from that, and hopefully they do. David's just a quality guy. He's a wonderful person, treats people the way they should be treated. Barry's the same way. You can tell that. You can tell the integrity of the organization and the feel of the organization as soon as you walk into the room. And that's a credit, you know, starting with David and certainly Barry Trotz. He is smart. He's been in the game his whole life. He understands chemistry. He's had to fight through some financial things over the years. I'm sure he wanted to do some things in past years and add some offense, and there was frustration, et cetera, for players and fans, but he did everything he could do. And now he's gotten to the point where he has made some terrific additions this year and last year, starting with Mike Fisher. So this is a team that is feared in the West, is feared and respected throughout the league, and that's a credit, you know, to David's construction of it.
Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today. Enjoy the rest of the series. Don't get too claustrophobic between those benches.
Oh, I won't. It's all good. Thanks.